Welcome to Cinema Savants, your home for all your movie and TV news, with Todd Vandenberg, Lee Vowell, and Rob Steele.
And coming up in this week's show, something a little different that you're probably not used to. We've got some, we've got some good news and some bad news. The bad news is Lee isn't here again. But that's okay. We found someone really cool to take his place. We've got Alex Hoy, writer and director of Prodigy. That, you know, that movie we've been talking about that we keep saying, hey, go see that. You have Netflix. We know you do. Watch it. He's here. This is cool. Greetings, Mr. Hoy. How you doing?
I'm here. I'm so thrilled to be here. Thank you guys so much for having me.
And I'm going to start silly because I pretty much always do with almost everything.
He does.
And it kind of involves your name a bit, because when we first saw your name written on the credits and everything, we hadn't seen interviews yet. Hoy is not how I would have pronounced it.
No, it's got seven letters and it's only one syllable.
So you had an ancestor who really wanted to win at Scrabble.
Yeah, I guess so. No, it's an Irish name. And it's spelled H-A-U-G-H-E-Y, if you can believe it. And I know it's been, you know, simplified since, you know, Americanized, if you will, since we've been here, because I went to Ireland a couple years ago, and we were asking everyone. There was actually a prime minister, a leader of some kind in Ireland in the 80s who had the same last name, and they pronounce it Haughey. So, you know, that's how I think it was originally pronounced. And frankly, I'm very glad that it's been down to Hoy, because my wife always says, you know, we should pronounce it the right way. I should start calling you, we should say our name is Haughey. And I'm like, sounds a lot like the braying of a donkey to me, so I prefer the incorrect pronunciation in this case.
Hoy is much simpler.
I found it when I saw you do an interview with someone, and the guy who was asking you looked just as confused as I felt when I heard it. So
I believe it. No, it made for. I always tell people the best story is that when I was in school, you know, when you have your birthday announced on the announcements every year or whatever, that it was always just so Haughey, Hughley, Haughey, like, you know, it was just something new every year. But the best I ever got was I went to a doctor's appointment, and I was waiting for the doctor to come in, and he came in and just said, I'd never met him before, he just said, my man, Mr. Hugahay. I didn't even correct him. I was like, man, I wish my name was Hugahay so bad.
Take it. Well, any more success?
Yeah, any more success and you can change it, right?
There you go. There you go.
Demand to be called by my rightful name.
I'll make it my my pseudonym.
Hugahay. It's a Hugahay joint.
So, moving on to your movies. Go figure.
Yes.
I don't know, where do we want to start with this? You did a bunch of short films.
Yes, that's true. Oh. So I met my directing partner on this, Brian, my writing and directing partner, Brian Bedall, at school. We both went to USC together in LA, and that's where we met, and we took to each other right away. He was very taken with me because I had in high school to kind of get into the film school. I made a 45-minute remake of the Ninja Turtles movie from 1990, except with all my like friends dressed up in like tights and like shells and like head, like it was amazing. And so I showed him that, and he immediately was like, "Okay, we're gonna be best friends."
Awesome.
And so that's kind of how that's our origin story, and we proceeded to work on stuff for each other's, you know, with at school, writing and doing shorts. We did shorts like, you know, we'd work on each other's short films for school, the student projects, and then we actually did stuff on our own outside of school as well, that we worked on with each other and developed a really great working relationship, which, you know, is we both have found to be something that's been really rare as we've moved into the professional space, which I wasn't expecting it to be so rare, but that's kind of the reason we are where we are today, because we continued, you know, we both had odd jobs here and there in the industry, but we would always be making short stuff on our own, and that's how we kind of kept in touch and kept that creative bond moving forward. And it came to the point where we both felt like we've done the short films we want to do, and we really want to kind of take the next step. And at that point, we felt really confident that we knew how to make something out of nothing, resource-wise at least, and make it look good and make it look like something that, you know, was made for a higher budget than maybe we were making it for. So we said, okay, if we can find the right story to tell, maybe this is the right time to actually take that next step and move into the feature realm as opposed to the short film route. So we kind of started throwing ideas around, and we came to a Brian had a log line that he had won a contest with like years ago. He wasn't even really thinking about, but it was, you know, it was not Prodigy, but it was the seed that became Prodigy basically. And once he kind of threw that out there, I latched onto it really hard, and we kind of just started bouncing ideas back and forth off each other. And then within a month, we had a really solid outline for it. And within the next month, I think we had the first draft of a screenplay for it.
Wow. That's really amazing. I've seen a couple of your short films, The Stoneheart.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an intense, like, 4 minutes.
Yeah, no, that was one that I actually, it's funny, it was released before Prodigy, but I actually made it after Prodigy.
Really?
Interesting. Yeah. And that was for a company called Crypt TV, who does stuff online, and they're pretty big on Facebook. And yeah, that was fun, because that's, horror's not, I know now it's like, you know, Prodigy's kind of marketed as pretty hard on the horror aspects of it, but it's not really a horror movie, much more a psychological thriller.
Right. I agree.
But so I had that, and then I had Stoneheart, which was kind of, I liked it because I wasn't trying to make it like, you know, straight horror. I got to be like a little more B movie with it, because, you know, I was like working with kind of a restricted budget to try and make a 9-foot statue that, you know.
Right.
So I tried to, like, you know, let myself go into that realm a little bit more. And you know, normally their shorts get, you know, 200,000, 400,000, 500,000 sometimes views on Facebook, and ours got like 5 million or something. So
I don't doubt it.
You win.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that was kind of so Stoneheart, you actually made that afterwards, because I was thinking, I wondered how the process, because obviously there's a lot of planning that goes into even a little short film. How does the process of creating something like that compare to your feature film, Prodigy? What,
oh, man.
Is it really?
Yeah, I wish it wasn't as much more, because I really thought that, you know, based on, because with the short films I've done, I've always been able to kind of, you know, be the umbrella that kind of is over everything. You know, we're always doing props and wardrobe and, you know, effects and all that stuff, and you can kind of keep a handle on everything. But with the feature, it was too much, and because I was at a job where I wasn't really doing much, so I basically started working on Prodigy full time before that job ended. And so I basically took on the role of the producer like very early, and so all that was on my plate, similar to it, the way it was in, you know, producing the short films.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but I was, of course, writing, I'd written the script, and I was going to direct it and all that stuff too. But man, that was, I mean, if I have one thing that I look back and say, I wish I could have done this differently, it was that I really wish I had had someone else there to like handle more of that stuff for me, because it was just, when it got to being on set, it was just too much, like, you know, to try and be directing an emotional scene, and it's like, oh, well, this prop didn't show up today, or, you know, now the bathroom exploded, so, you know, what?
All right, then.
Well, I guess that's me. So you guys just, you know, shoot something else for a minute while I go and handle it. So it just all added up, and it's hard to, there were several hair pulling moments on set that I was really, at a point where it was like, oh man, this is just too much for me to be handling on my own. But we soldiered through and made it work. And, you know, we came out. And the funny part is we came out. The shoot was so crazy because we had just a skeleton crew. No, you know, like I think 5 or 6 people as a crew. So we were just always pushing it, you know, all the way to the limits. And so we ended when the shoot ended, me and Brian were both like, oh man, this is terrible. like we've done all this and the movie's going to be just not anything like what we wanted. And we're going to have done all this and it's going to be for nothing. And we were just so downtrodden about the whole process because just, we were so exhausted and wiped and, you know, spent so many late nights because I'd get to set an hour before everybody. And then we would stay probably 2 hours late after everybody, after a 12-hour shoot, you know, just planning for the next day. And then I would come home and I'd be like answering emails and going, you know, making sure everybody had all the info. Like, so it was just an insane, it was 2 straight weeks of shooting basically. So it was really just a wild, wild ride. And by the end we were so beat up, but finally after a few weeks we like got kind of an assembly cut together and we looked at it and we were like, hey, this isn't so bad at all. this is kind of what we were aiming for. So after a lot more editing, we finally got it to a place where we were really proud of it. We really were. We really liked the way that it, you know, turned out, all things considered.
Yeah, with good reason that you're really proud of it. I mean, my God, it's a heck of a movie.
Thank you.
Not everyone has seen it, although obviously it's trending so high that a lot of people have, which is great.
Yeah.
You know, you talked about you working with Brian and splitting. How exactly did that work with two directors? How did you split those duties up? And how would you say that your strengths would play off each other? How did that work out?
Yeah, well, so we wrote it together as well, which I was skeptical about that going in because I was like, well, you know, that might lead to, you know, because we both also have strong opinions, so we will, you know, we'll butt heads on stuff too. And, you know, it's funny if you hear us on the phone, it's like we'll have like a big argument over like the use of a comma and the, you know, conjunction. Like, this is the silliest things. But
not when you're writing, I can relate to that.
Right. So the writing was, I was curious how that was going to go, but luckily the way the story was kind of set up played to our advantage because I was able to basically go and write all the stuff with the psychologist and the girl in the room. Mm-hmm. And he was able to go and write all the stuff. You know, we had outlined all the scenes, so we knew kind of what was going to be happening when. And so I wrote all the stuff with the guy and the girl in the room, and he would write all the stuff with the control room stuff, the control room people. And so then at that point, we kind of, you know, were able to really start collaborating once that stuff was done. And, like, we put those together and decided, you know, where we needed to touch this up there and that, you know, all that kind of mess. But then we got to directing, which it worked really well on set because – like I said, we developed a really great relationship on set, and we both trust each other on set, which is just not something that I've encountered very often. Because to have somebody that you can trust to hit the quality bar you want to hit, the way you want to hit it, is not, you know, and obviously, you know, having it be both of our being our movie, I think helps with that because. He wants it to be as good as I want it to be, which is which you don't often get someone who feels that way, especially working at the level we're working at on such a low budget project. So what's great is that he's very technical and he's very technically competent in terms of making sure that, you know, that we're hitting all of those everything right on that, and he's behind the monitor watching for that kind of stuff. Whereas I'm very hands-on with the actors, like, you know, going and making sure everybody's hitting the little teeny beats that I, you know, that we have, you know, outlined for the scene and stuff like that. So that worked well. And, you know, the reason I always like working with him, too, is because I'll pull out of him that side of my strengths. I'll make him, articulate what you want to say, or what your feeling is missing from this beat, so that you and that pulls that out of him, and he makes me like look at the the lighting setup and the this and that, and so we're both getting a little bit better every time we work together too, which is what I really like about the process of working together in that capacity. So yeah, on set I think that again, because we wrote it together, our vision for the film was so in tune with each other that that's what really made it. Cause I completely trusted if I had to go deal with the bathrooms that he, he knew what we wanted from this shot and he could get it. And when he, there was an epidemic that swept through our set and everybody got sick. So he was like,
oh my gosh,
dying sick. And so he had to like sit down and but he knew that when he couldn't like be just, as focused as maybe he would have been, like that I would be there to make sure it was exactly what we wanted from that. And so that was great because it was so funny because I don't think we had any arguments on set. Like we bickered back and forth all the time while we were writing, but on set we were like, in line and we knew what we wanted. We're also very much about preparation. So we were super, super, micro prepared on every beat and moment. So that's what allowed us to work so smoothly on set together for sure.
Yeah, 2-week shoot, you'd have to be like focused in. So basically he set the scene and you made sure there was something worth watching in the scene. That's amazing. I mean, that you guys meshed that well. That's beautiful.
Yeah, no, it was so funny because the actors were like, they all came, they've all talked to me afterwards and been like, yeah, I was expecting it to be a lot more trouble than you guys made. It really ended up having a set that was very amenable to everybody because they were expecting us to be at least butting heads on something here or there, but we really made it through very smoothly on set together, even though the shoot was crazy. The shoot was crazy, totally nuts. But we just wouldn't have made it through if we weren't in line with each other's vision completely.
Wanted to ask you when you were writing this, was it because all the superhero movies have become really big now? Was that any kind of an influence in this? There's kind of an element there.
There's an X-Men fan. There's definitely X-Men stuff going on there for sure. And it's, we've gotten a lot of comments, from people. And now that the new Dark Phoenix movie trailer, when that came out, we got a lot of people commenting on I saw there was one tweet from somebody that was like, oh, Ellie and Prodigy is greater than Jean Grey in this new movie. And I'm like, yeah,
I'll agree with that.
Yes.
So, it's really interesting that you asked that because that initial log line that Brian had written about for that won the contest was basically like a psychologist goes to help it sits down to have sessions with a young like superpowered being basically and the whole idea where we started on it was like, oh, this is basically he's shaping this powerful child into the kid could be Lex Luthor, the kid could be Superman, kind of depending on how these go. So that's kind of where we started on it, and it kind of took turns into a lot of different genres and areas. But that was definitely kind of the seed that Prodigy grew out of, was the idea of can this maladjusted, yes, prepubescent, to use her words, be transformed into something that, I think the idea that's still in there is that, hopefully she can find a way to feel satisfied using these powers in a way that's not, a detriment to society, but instead a benefit to society. So I think that that was definitely there more kind of in our earliest iterations, is like, okay, is this going to be something where, you know, the military is going to be talking more about, you know, oh, we want to use it for this and that. And we kind of moved away from that because we felt like, one, it was very close to X-Men. It was very close to, like, the Jean Grey stuff. And two, that kind of, I feel like we've seen that done more often where, you know, and we were already working in a pretty familiar space. There's a lot of our movie that's kind of, you know, almost purposefully, actually, you know, like, not cliche, but it's, you know, it's based on tropes that people have seen before, and we're basing a lot of the characters and things like that on pre-established tropes that people are familiar with. So that, and that's usually kind of the control room side, a lot of it, so that we're hoping right. Ellie stands out even more from that for people. And that's been interesting to kind of see that develop because, you know, we veer into a little bit of horror territory, a little psychological, sci-fi, you know, thriller, drama, you know, there's a lot going on, which is...
I didn't mean to imply it just stuck with the superhero thing. It was... But
it's like, I feel like that's still there in a way, like, you know, and a lot of people have read it that way. I think that people that have pre-established, you know, superhero kind of vision cones,
yeah,
we'll see that element of it. But, you know, when my aunt watches it, she doesn't necessarily see that element of it. But a lot of, you know, gentlemen like yourselves that we've talked to about the movie, who may, I don't want to presume that you guys are nerds, but, you know, I'm a nerd, and I can kind of get that vibe from you. So nerds will definitely see that in the movie, and it's definitely there.
We host a movie podcast, of course we do. You know, I like what you said about the tropes, because it makes the movie more accessible for a lot of people, because it plays off all these things, but it's definitely not cliche. To me, it turned into the hunt for her humanity, and that's, to me, that's what it's about, which elevates it way past Jean Grey territory. Hopefully, we'll eventually get there with an X-Men movie. Yeah. Maybe they'll figure out how to make a good one. Maybe they'll hire you, and then you guys can pull it off.
I like that idea.
But there's a lot of important things going on in this movie. There really are. You talked about the low budget more than once. I think that was a big factor in the fact that helped it work, because you had no choice but to focus on the story the acting, and they're both great.
Yeah.
Both the lead actors are great, and the story is great too. Do you worry at all that, like, if you're blessed by having a really big budget for your next picture, is that going to overwhelm what worked for Prodigy?
I hope not. I mean, that's, you know, that always the goal is to be able to take what's worked and, you know, do more with it with a big budget. And then, you know, it's interesting you asked that question, because that's the trend I see. I'm always trying to analyze what happens to directors, because a lot of times you see this happen where a director will do a small movie that does really well and you know, people really like the character driven focus on this and that, whenever, and then they get a chance to do something bigger and it just all falls apart. And I don't know if it's influence from, you know, or, you know, from the studio, or just an overwhelming, but I mean, it's also, you know, I think it's worth exploring that, like, you know, there are very few people I think that can consistently tell good stories with big budgets, because there's, you know, when you have all that to, you know, that space to play in, a lot of times people have a really hard time bringing that into a focus that works for people in a way that you can when you have two people sitting in a room talking, like, you know, like we were kind of forced to do. And I hope that Prodigy actually improves my ability to do that, because, like you said, that was we knew going in that we didn't have a movie unless we really had a really strong story, and we spent basically a year working on the script, you know, trimming the fat and making sure that we had, like, the leanest, meanest, most focused like story, because, you know, it is two people talking in a room, so we not only knew that it had to be a strong story, but we also knew that we if it wasn't, we were going to lose people, you know? And, it's interesting because our biggest worry going in, and we were kind of on pins and needles, is we have this story set up and there's some sci-fi elements, but they don't come into play until like 30 minutes into the movie or longer, I think. So we really bank on people being invested in the psychological story before things really start rolling. And once they start rolling, it's like the energy picks up and it stays pretty, you know, pretty high throughout the rest of the movie. And we knew if we got people there, we'd be in good shape. But we were really like, are people going to be just bored and not want to, like, go on this ride just to even get there? And thus far, we have had a lot less, you know, this movie was so boring, I turned it off comments than I thought we were going to.
Yeah, the answer is no. We are not bored, that's for sure.
No. Although, I was thinking that, because Ellie is such a young character, well, and actress, of course.
Yeah.
But was that kind of a worry going in with people going, they've got a kid in this?
Yeah. And, well, so it's like, it's funny because we hit all the things you're supposed to do for a really low budget movie. It's like we have one location, a handful of characters, you know, nothing too hard to manage there. But then we were like, so, you know, people were like, okay. And then it's like, oh, wait, but there's a 9-year-old and there's like special effects where things are flying around. And it's like, wait a second here. Those aren't what you're supposed to do when you have no money to make a movie. So, we knew again, when we started this, we were like, okay, well, if we want to have a movie, like the whole movie is basically staked on the fact that we could find someone who's young and could actually pull this off. Because the hook of the movie is that, you know, I've seen lots of movies, and that's initially why I kind of gravitated to the idea, was I've seen lots of movies where, you know, there's a kid that acts like an adult and does it convincingly. And I always think that that's such a fun dynamic, but it's usually used in kind of like as like a side story, you know. One of my favorite examples is in Looper. You remember Looper, that kid?
Looper, yeah.
He acts like a kind of a weird adult, and he's great. But again, he's kind of like an ancillary character that, I mean, he becomes kind of the focus of the movie in the end, but he's not, like, the movie stays with Joseph Gordon-Levitt the whole time, so it's not like a movie. So I was just, you know, when we were initially talking about it, I was like, man, if we could find that character and really, like, just stick with them in a way that was engaging, like, I think that'd be something that people would be, like, very peeling back these layers of what's going on with her. And so we spent a lot of time, you know, making sure that, like, that kid would be that way in the writing. And then when we finally said, okay, let's do this, the first thing we did was like, okay, let's cast the kid. Like, that'll be the determining factor if we can do this or not.
Right.
So it was originally written as a boy, which is always a fun story to tell. And we had a bunch of auditions, several weeks worth of auditions with young boys. And we just weren't getting what we needed. And we were like, oh man, this isn't good.
Kids today just don't know how to deliver their lines.
Oh, well, you know, we knew it was a hard role, and we knew that it would be hard for somebody to, like, you know, hard for somebody to come and, like, do it, nail it in the audition, but we weren't even, like, really getting that close.
You should have tried Dana Carvey.
But so at that point, we were having a discussion of, like, okay, well, we might have to change the story to kind of match the limitations of our performer here if this is what we're going to be getting. And luckily, in that same discussion, we were like, well, and we might as well open the field up to girls too, because there's nothing in the script that's like, oh, it has to be a boy. Like, it could be a girl just as easily. I'm telling you, within the first day, I'm not even kidding, like, we got 10 submissions that were like head and shoulders better than any of the boys. And that first day, Savannah, who ended up being our young lady, submitted a tape for it, and my God, she was like unbelievable. Like, the tape was so good. I still have it. I go watch it every once in a while just to remember how, like, awesome it was to see her, because she just has this the thing I love about Savannah is she has this like control that you really don't see of her, like of her expression, of her like emotion, and her eyebrows. It's like, it's, she's very subtle with it and can do it and can convey a lot subtextually through very subtle motions of her face. And she just nailed it in this tape. And I was just, I was over the moon. Cause like, man, not only is she great, but she's also like freckle faced, red hair. Like she was 9 years old at that time when we were first looking. And when we started shooting, she was still nine. So like that, and once we saw that tape, we were like, okay, well, we have a movie here.
And changed the name from Steve.
Right, we changed it from Theodore. I think we were calling him Teddy, and then it changed to Eleanor and Eddie, or Ellie, not Eddie. So yeah, once we found her, then we knew we had to cast the leading man, the psychologist character. And Richard came in, and we had one of the scenes we had people reading was that emotional scene that's like near the end, and Richard just, I mean, nailed it. Like, I mean, and we literally got done with the audition. We were like, he was like, okay, well, should I try something else? Do something different? We were like, no,
I need that tomorrow.
That was great. So I don't really know what. So we ended up bringing them back in together to read together to see kind of the chemistry. And once we saw that, it's like, here we go.
I think that's one of the things, one of the many things that makes it work is because his character is so open and she is so closed. I mean, she's like a vault. She's not like a steel trap. And he just keeps on working away, and he's trying to get her to open up. He's not trying to open her himself.
Right.
It's this great cat and mouse game, but it's for her benefit, and she doesn't want to believe that. It's so cool.
Right. No, we worked hard to make sure that there was, you know, the interplay between those two was, I mean, because that was the movie really from the get-go, was like, if we could make their dynamic work. And that's the feedback we get a lot, is that, you know, in the room, which is the part that's the long two people talking most of the time, it's like, that should be the boring part. Like, that's the part that people just
love. That's the part you got to invest in. I mean, that pulled it off.
Right. And that was our hook all along, was if we could have a girl that could pull that off, you know, we thought we'd have people. And so it's really been the satisfying part of this, is that that's the thing that people have responded to most consistently, you know, with positivity, is that like, where did you find this girl? She was amazing. Her and the guy, just like, you know, their dynamic was great. And so it's been so satisfying to see that. And I only lament that poor Richard, who is the psychologist.
Richard Neal, yeah.
Yeah, Richard Neal he gets lost sometime in the shuffle because, you know, the young girl who's so good, you know, people kind of latch onto that. But I just love his performance in the movie too. And I think he really carries it, and it wouldn't be the same movie without him.
No, it wouldn't. I mean, he like you said, he nails it and really makes it. It reminds me a lot, if you may remember the movie Bug, which is, in a lot of ways, it's just two people talking, except you got Michael Shannon in that movie. You kind of expect him. I mean, he wasn't that well known then, but I mean, for Savannah Lyles to come through, that's just like, what on earth? Because she comes across as a really bright child. She doesn't come across as an adult character.
Right.
I mean, there's a huge difference. I mean, she's tremendous. And he is too. He's very believable. It's, like I said, it's a really cool movie. It's really sad in some ways, but it's a really cool movie. It's definitely worth watching.
Yeah.
You mentioned in other interviews, you know, how grateful you were that Netflix was available, but obviously because you got a gigantic audience. Netflix won't tell you how big, but obviously you got a huge audience on Netflix. Do you think it's a better viewing experience to go out to the theater and have the big screen and just have all the people around you with their reactions, or?
I'm a theater guy. You know, I still go to the movies whenever I get the chance. Obviously, not as much anymore, as you guys said. I have a young baby at home, so you know. I don't get the chance as often as I used to. But whenever there's a movie I want to see, like, I want to see it in the theaters. I mean, that's part of this process has been, you know, I never got into the film festival scene. That was never Brian has kind of done that on some of his stuff, but I never really tried to do that. So, you know, that was kind of, we knew that was going to be kind of the route we had to go in order to get some attention for it.
Mm-hmm.
So we got into, I think, 9 festivals, and I went to probably 4 or 5 of them. You know, several. One was in Brazil, and one was in Buffalo.
Wow!
So I didn't get to go to all of them. But man, I tell you what, like, nothing beats sitting in a, like, you know, we would get there, and I had no idea what to expect. But there'd be packed audiences, and they would, like, the reactions were palpable within the theater. You know,
I'm sure.
If you guys remember the moment where we first reveal that she has the powers, you know, the chess game and that piece move.
Yep, the piece moves.
Like,
yeah.
Every audience, like, gasps and, you know, like, just like, you know, and laughs at, you know, because she's kind of digging at him the whole time, which I, you know, we'd been editing the movie for so long that we had really forgotten in writing that her kind of digs at the psychologist the whole time were meant to be funny. Like, you know, we just kind of, like, at this point, we've heard it so often, it just feels like dialogue to me. And so, you know, getting those reactions from people, like, it was unlike anything, you know, I'd ever experienced, because, you know, I had only seen my stuff really on TVs and, you know, with friends. So that experience was unbelievable. We had our premiere was in at Cinequest up in San Jose, California, which is a big festival. And there were like 700 people or something at our screening of it. So that was awesome. We had amazing crowds at all the festivals we went to. And so we got to have big audiences with big responses, and just seeing that was in the theater was a whole new experience. And I've noticed, actually, watching it a few times now with some people at, you know, on couches, that it, you know, it's a much different experience watching in the theater than it is watching at home. And a learning experience for me as well, because one of the characters, the kind of heavyset guy who's got a date,
like, in the control room, right? He's in a hurry, yeah.
You're making jokes or making remarks that are inappropriate. He in the theaters, like, people loved him. Like, they laughed and like we got huge responses, and people would afterwards say, like, that guy was great. And then at home, like, everyone hates him. Like, they're just like, this guy is way out of place in this movie. Like, he's clearly just comic relief. You know, I hated all his jokes. Like, and so I think that just being in that theater with, you know, other people laughing,
yep,
made that element of the movie work a lot better than it did for people when they're like, oh, okay, like, he's supposed to be funny, you know, like, watching at home. Like, I don't know. But that's been fascinating for me to kind of
that
see
is.
This there, because it's like, there's lots of little things like that with it, like, played really well in theaters that I think people don't, like, necessarily feel when they're watching it at home.
Well, actually, as a follow-up to this, because this was released on Netflix, and this has been kind of a big thing of late, do you think that streaming service movies should be eligible for like, Oscar awards and stuff? Of which I would actually nominate Prodigy at this point, because I thought it was that damn good.
Wow, okay. So. Oh, we'll take it. If you can get us there, then I absolutely support that.
You can put that on the DVD, nominated for an Oscar by a guy on a podcast.
I think that they should definitely be eligible in some way. I think that I like the idea of, you know, making them go to theaters, like, to be eligible. Just because then I could go see it in the theater. Because, again, I like the,
right,
the theater experience, even for movies that aren't mine. I'd prefer to go see a movie in a theater, so... I just like that idea. I think that's a good way to keep things like, okay, the movies that they think are worthy of that kind of acclaim, they you know, they send to theaters for 2 weeks, you know, or, you know, limited runs. You know, I live in LA, so that always works out for me, because they're always showing those movies here. So, you know, if they just did that, that would be okay with me. I would totally be okay with a Netflix movie getting nominated if it. I think that's a good way to, you know, keep the separate, and it forces them to choose, like, you know, okay, these are the high quality movies. We'll send those ones to theaters, which would be interesting to kind of see how they would take on that process as well.
Yeah, take that, Mr. Spielberg, know it all. your next project. Before we talk about your next project, because I hope you want to talk about it. What if this isn't your dream project? What would your dream project be?
Oh man. I would love, you know, I'd love to do a bigger and more, because I think that for me, the bigger the canvas, the more I think depth is available to me. That's the way I kind of look at it. And that's why I was so anxious to move into features, is because even just being in longer form, I love movies where there's a lot going on kind of subtextually and under the surface. And the more layers there are, the more I like things usually. And there's kind of a thoroughness to those kind of movies that that you don't necessarily see in smaller stuff sometimes, because you just don't have the bandwidth for it.
Okay.
So I would love to do bigger movies, and I'd love that challenge, because I would love to see if, you know, if I could bring, like you were saying earlier, if I could bring the focused storytelling elements that are a part of the movies I love and the things I make to this point, hopefully, into that realm, and see if that would translate. Cause I think it is rare to find somebody who can do that. And I don't want to presume that I can do that, but of course I hope that my abilities would translate into that. But I mean, my favorite movies are always like, I mean, I'd love to make something that's totally unique. I mean, one of my favorite movies is Taxi Driver, which, you know, that wasn't a big movie, obviously, but I feel like it's a totally
there's so much going on, and it's unique.
So much going on there, and it's a movie like, you've never seen a movie even like close to being like that movie, or like,
right.
And I like that, but I also, I mean, as we were able to kind of capitalize on in Prodigy, they're like the genre elements of Prodigy are kind of what I think like draw a lot of people to it, and so I find myself kind of drawn to like some genre stuff because of the way that it draws people in. And then what I like, I mean, my favorite thing to do is then kind of subvert what people expect from a genre, and then kind of, you know, like turn the corner on people and in a way that's unexpected, to kind of make them, you know, think about why they like what draws them into this, and what it is that, that's propelling them towards this kind of story. So that feeds into my next project too, which is definitely a kind of genre piece. It's like a revenge movie, mm-hmm. but it's with like a female protagonist, and in a way that isn't like the way I've seen it. Cause I when I started working on it, I watched a ton of, you know, there are a lot of female revenge movies.
Right.
It's always like, oh, my boyfriend was beat up, or I was, you know, something terrible happened to me, and mm-hmm. now I need to go out and learn to fire a gun and start, you know, taking it back to people. And, you know, I was just kind of like, oh man, that, like, there's never, you don't see like Taken or Man on Fire with a female protagonist, because they just don't. I don't know if they don't believe that people will buy that there's a capable female like that can do that already, and like you have to like show that they've like made a turn. But I think it raises a lot more questions about a character if there's already a female that she comes into a room and, you know, people kind of like, you know, they know not to mess with her. So that's kind of where that started, and that's the kind of story I like to tell. I find myself gravitating toward at least at this point when I'm on working on this scale of storytelling and movie making.
So basically you're telling us that you want to make the next Emoji movie. as far from that as possible, obviously.
Depth and depth and storytelling are the keys to keys to a good movie as far as I'm concerned.
Sure, so and definitely.
I don't think Emoji had either of those.
No, and it definitely shows in Prodigy because there's a lot of depth and there's a lot of, like you said, there are a lot of layers to Prodigy. I mean, it's really, really.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm glad that you guys seem to latch on to those and again it's interesting for me to see the different responses people have to it and what people like and like, you know, because some people really like the emotional elements of it, and some people really like even the fact that it kind of ramps up at the end and there's like actually a little bit of, you know, special effects and things going on. They're impressed by that element of it. So it's fun to see the way some people like will pick up on, you know, threads that we kind of put under the surface that I like giving audiences credit. That's what I like to try and give the audience credit in a way that, like, I feel like a lot of movies today beat an audience over the head with, yeah, I'm a character, this is how I'm feeling right now about you, and this is what I want. Like, and they just tell you everything, as opposed to like letting an audience kind of, you know, peel back the layers themselves. And it's also interesting to see that like there are people that don't like that. They're like, you know, they're like, oh, I wanted to see more of Ellie's backstory. And whereas we were like, we had a draft originally where some of that was in there, and it was like, well, it just really isn't that important to the story we're telling right here, like, and now, like, and what's going on. Like, as long as you know this about her, it's not really important, like, to know, like, the rules of that she can only use her powers this way, that, like, or what, it's not really important. It's like, let people figure that out based on what's in the movie and how we're kind of displaying that to people.
And I that's such a smart approach. Like you need our advice, but I mean, the movie can mean more to more people that way, because everyone can get something different out of the movie. So you've got a broader audience that way, because it means different things to different people, as opposed to this is how you will feel. Well, you're only going to appeal to a narrower audience that way. So yeah, I mean, Prodigy is excellent stuff. Really looking forward to your next work. And when you hit the film festival circuit, Miami does have a couple of excellent film festivals.
Okay,
saying.
I'd invite you to the one in Augusta, but we don't have one.
You've got one in Rome.
That's on the other side. Oh, that's right. There's a Georgia. Anyway. I had a flat tire there once and bad memories. No, don't go to that one. I guess to kind of wrap up the show, I wanted to ask you, do you have any advice for people who are writing scripts and how to, you know, get this?
Yeah.
Have ideas. And
yeah,
stuff?
I will. I, the interesting thing about the journey of Prodigy is that, you know, along the way, we met a lot of other filmmakers and at festivals and, you know, just distribution and stuff like that, doing our due diligence. And what I've kind of noticed, and I mean, it was kind of, we kind of backed into it just because this is the kind of movie we liked. And like I told you guys, I gravitate towards this kind of story. So I knew we would have a thriller, and, you know, we from early on had the superhero sci-fi kind of elements to it. And we were luckily able to we kind of turned that in a horror direction, especially for like the marketing, because that gets a lot more people interested. And so, I mean, if I was giving advice to someone who was trying to do something similar, I would say, if you actually want an audience for the movie, because the only reason we made it on the Netflix is because we performed really well on Amazon when we did just like a, you know, like a video streaming on demand run. And we ran into so many people that did not have that experience. And it's because their movies didn't really have much of an audience. So, I mean, the fact that we were able to kind of touch on so many genres and hit the genre kind of elements of it so hard really enabled us to find that audience for the movie as we move forward. So I mean if I was going to try and tell a story on this level again, I would definitely start from a place of, okay, at least think about as you're doing it, in the same way you limit, like we started with limitations, like I told you, like we knew we'd have to do something that was a single location, a few characters, just so we could manage everything. And within those same limitations, I would also start with, like, okay, make sure that, that there's an audience for the story you want to tell. Because otherwise, the problem is the market is now, it's open and available in a way that's amazing. So many people were able to see Prodigy because if this, you know, if we hadn't, if we'd gone straight to DVD, you know, 15 years ago, we've been praying to, like, maybe get into Blockbuster or something. Whereas now we can, you can, anybody can throw it up on Amazon and it's available to everyone. But the problem, the flip side of that coin is that now there's oversaturation of so much content that's available to people, and it's very hard to, like, separate that when you're not, when you're a small movie, you don't have marketing budget to go to really throw behind it. So if you're going to do something like this, just know that you're going to do everything yourself, and know that, like, that's all going to, like, that's all going to be thrust on you. And so make it easier on yourself by thinking about these elements at least a little bit before you go into it, because it really will make a difference on the other side.
Well, that's cool. I mean, that's some really great advice.
I do my best.
clearly you do your best.
As you did with Prodigy, which was a spectacular film. Go see this. Well, I keep saying go see this film because I'm used to saying that. You have Netflix. Yeah. Watch the film.
Everybody's got Netflix. You can very easily.
Or it's $9. It's like two cups of coffee on Amazon, and you can own it forever.
There you go. There you go. I like that.
See? There we go. So, Alex Hoy, thank you for coming on Cinema Savants. We really appreciate it. And when the next one comes out, let us know. You can come back and
I will absolutely keep you guys updated. I it's been a thrill, and I mean, thank you guys for having me on. It's a thrill to come and talk to you guys like you. And honestly, the success we've had with the movie is a lot in part due to people like you who are willing to kind of bring the little guy on and shine a spotlight on us, because it's tough to compete with the big boys out there, and these little, you know, spots here and there, they go a long way.
Yeah, the Russo brothers weren't calling, so they didn't really need the help, you know.
I assume that if they had, you would have, you know, told them they had to wait 50 minutes for me to be done with our interview.
Absolutely.
We're not even talking to that trash. You were fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much. And thank your wife for allowing us to kidnap you from your parental duties.
I'm always going to thank my wife. Otherwise, you won't be hearing from me for quite a long time.
and by the way, Chris Evans is going to be out of a gig, so you might want to audition for the other side of the camera, because there's a good role coming up. You got to look for that. So
okay, Captain America, here I come.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And it was awesome.
We'll see you when the next movie comes out, man.
Good.
And then I'll do something to end the show after that. So there.
Awesome.
Behold the power of post-production.
Woo-hoo! Wow, we kidnapped you. I'm so sorry. Well, I'm not sorry, because it was awesome for us, but man, thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Fantastic.
Look, I love coming and talking. Look, the thing about is, like, I don't get to talk about the movie, like, very often. You know, people will just, you know, the people I interact with mostly about the movie are like, hey, yeah, that was awesome, man. How'd you do the special effects? Like, you know.
I grabbed the vase and I threw it through the window.
Like, you know, it poured so much time into the movie, you know.
Yeah, my gosh,
basically 2 years of my life into it, you know. So it's like, I like to actually have discussions about it that go sure. a little bit further than just this and that. But if you want to know about a special effects, I'm still happy to tell you.
I did read where you were the prop master that threw the vase and did the excellent shattering of the window. That's beautiful.
You want to talk about tension? That was like
one piece of glass.
Everyone outside gathered around the monitor because, like, we had one window to break, and they were expensive. Like, we didn't want to pay for another one. And,
oh my god!
You know,
the cameras. Everyone use a cell phone just in case.
We also set up the camera, and then everybody left the room. So it was like nobody was in there because we didn't want glass flying at anybody.
Sure.
So, I mean, Tom Brady'd that thing, man. I'll tell you that. Nailed it, like, right on center, because I was throwing it. It was a weird angle, and I was worried because it's like I had to basically throw it from off to the side so you couldn't see me as you were looking through the mirror.
Makes sense.
And, you know, then I just hit the middle, and luckily we had the light set up perfectly. Our DP set up the light perfectly, so, like, all the glass that went into the room, just got caught in that light, so it just looks, goes right in. Oh man,
that is That's beautiful.
My proudest moment.
Well, okay, I think your proudest moment would be co-writing that script, but yeah, I mean, it's.
And he's got a small child at home.
That's right. that's wild.
I have other proud moments.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But
by the way, speaking as parents of older kids that we both have,
yeah.
You said 11 months old?
11 months, yeah.
Brace yourself. You're not even.
I'm getting.
You're just getting started, man.
Like, you know, she used to just like hang out with me. Now she's moving, and so all she wants to do is crawl to things that she is not supposed to be crawling towards. And so,
yeah.
It's already getting like, and then she wants to walk so bad. And I'm just like, oh God, this is bad. this is not gonna end well because she's a maniac. She just throws herself all over the place and. Well, you know, I feel like I'm constantly just grabbing her to keep her from bonking her head on things.
Yeah, well, that's going to continue for a long time.
Yeah. So, Rob, it was you. You just happened upon the movie.
I turned on Netflix and it had come up under, hey, you've watched this other stuff, you'd like this too, and I went,
okay, great. So okay, it was recommended to you.
Right.
That's great.
And then I stopped by and talked to with Elle and Bill.
There you go.
Because we were talking about their show, and they said, "Have you seen this? You need to see this." I'm like, okay, I'll see it. Jeez. And then, like 2 days later, we're doing the review show, and Todd goes, "I'm going to review a movie called Prodigy." And in the back of my head, I'm like,
"It was Todd that found it. I don't know why I thought it was Rob."
But we both found it. I mean,
we both found it. Yeah, okay, really, yeah. But Todd, you had seen it going into the review, right? Like you were the one who brought it to the table.
Right. I caught it first, but
brought it to us.
Okay. Yeah. Kind of by happenstance.
Okay. Did it just pop up on Netflix somewhere?
Yeah. Same thing. Just popped up on Netflix, and I thought, well, that sounds really interesting. Luckily, I was right because it's awesome. Really good. I wish I could remember what the film was that said. You know, because you watched.
Oh yeah, because that's great for us because it means that we're like in the algorithm of Netflix, like, and it's really pushing us.
Oh yeah,
that's a big bit of it, yeah.
Because we had to. That's really where we turn a corner on Amazon when we, the first month we got like, you know, we I mean, just full disclosure, we got like $10,000 worth of business, which was. Way more than they expected us to get in like the first month, but you know, which again, that's like, okay, it's not that much, but again, because we were just a tiny movie with nothing behind it, like they were like, wow, that's great. And that performance basically got us into the algorithm on Amazon, which it's really hard to get into, I guess, because then Amazon started pushing it in like the, oh, recommended for you, or the, you might like this, you know, like kind of that. Mm-hmm. And then we basically like, you know, quadrupled that business the next month, like, because got in the Amazon's like algorithm. And so I'm trying to determine, because Netflix will tell me anything, are we like, is, has that happened on Netflix where we're really in there? And I think we are. People are sending me several, you know, screenshots of it, like, oh, trending page, you know, like trending now for Prodigy, and I'm like, oh yes. So I think we are, and that just means, hopefully, I think that sets us up for, you know, because they've licensed the movie for a year, and I'm hoping that means that they're gonna like re-up once it's done, because I prefer to just stay on Netflix forever because it's the best place for exposure in terms of something like this.
Yeah, another, the algorithm for books on Amazon is if you get 25 reviews, preferably a favorable kind, they put you into the more.
Oh, interesting. So it may be review based as well.
Yeah, I know that's at least good. Part of it for books. I haven't made a movie.
I pushed everybody to go like write a review on Amazon, because when it came out on Amazon, I mean we didn't know we were going to be on Netflix at that point, because they
right.
That they, until we had that big April was when it was our second month, and we had that big uptick in business. That's when the distributor, like, because they had taken their whole slate of movies to Netflix, and they were like, nah, like we don't want anything. Like we're focused on originals. Like we're not really looking right now. And then after that uptick, that's when they took it back to Netflix by itself, and said, like, oh, you guys should look at this.
Interesting.
And that's when they, like, actually, you know, considered it and made the deal, because I think they're not doing as much licensing as they once were, which is really great, because it means that the movie got itself on the Netflix, basically, which is a much
better story
than just being kind of, like, part of
the The movie, it might have been, because I can't go back and see, but looking at other things that they recommend and thinking of what I'd seen recently, it might have been Hostiles that was linked to, which is kind of a stretch to me. But when I really liked Hostiles, but they're pretty different films.
Yeah.
I guess they're both kind of psychological thrillers in very different ways.
I have that on my list. I haven't actually seen it yet. I can't believe I didn't see it in theaters. It's totally up my alley as far as movies go. I'm like, Dances with Wolves is one of my favorite movies. I love those kind of, that kind of period, like end of the Civil War and the beginning of, like, just basically eradicating the Indians. Like, I love that kind of period of storytelling. So I can't believe I haven't seen it yet.
Well, it's all about that period. I think you'll like it, but I don't think you'll like it as much as Prodigy, because, you know. But yeah,
I'm thrilled that you guys are big fans.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
it really is. I mean, it's one of the movies that you watch it again, and it's like, wow, okay, I didn't even notice that the first time, because like you said, there are layers and there's so much going on.
It's hard to try and like make there be enough kind of meat, you know, beneath the surface to make it feel like it wasn't just like, and I don't think that, I just feel like that's something that's missing a lot of times in small independent movies.
Right.
So again, that's kind of something that we really focused on, making sure that it was there going in. But yeah, I the movie is great because I still watch it. I like it. I'm really proud of what it was for what it is, especially like given, like, you know, we made the movie for like less than $100,000. Like it's
that's insane.
And so for what it is, like I think it hit like right kind of where I was hoping it would. And again, it's been so satisfying because then we were able to just like, we hit the benchmarks we wanted to. We went to the festivals, we got distribution, we actually made money on Amazon, which is like, you know, like everyone told us like, don't expect to make anything. And I was like, okay, it's fine. So I was ready not to, and then we did, and that led to Netflix, which is kind of where we were aiming, like from the get-go. Like I never thought that anybody was going to be like, oh yeah, we'll take this to theaters for you. Like that was unrealistic to me because there's no stars. It's not like, you know, it's not so cerebral, like a Primer or something that, like, you know, is people are going to latch onto as like, you know, unique in that way. So I think it feels like a movie, and that was always, you know, kind of where I settled on it. It was like, it feels like a real movie, and I think people will like it. And I think that, like you were saying earlier, all the genres that are kind of mixed into it,
yeah,
it kind of offers something to a lot of people. And then I think it has like heart. I think the movie has heart to it that just kind of congeals.
Oh, absolutely.
And together and like gives people something to like leave the experience feeling something that they weren't necessarily expecting.
No, you don't expect that when you see this, when the movie starts at all. You don't, which there are so many reveals, like I'm telling you, you and Brian are the guys that wrote it, but I mean, that's part of the brilliance. It's like, you don't expect an 11-year-old girl, what the hell's going on in this, you know, and then things keep on coming out, and even to the very end.
I was going to say, it's awesome, too, that you guys get to go in, you know, I mean, I guess you know there's a girl just from the, you know, thumbnail, right. But you don't necessarily know what the movie's going to be going into it. And that's great because even in like, I hated like even having to make a longer trailer for it because it was like, so much of the movie is like letting people find these little tidbits out as they go.
Yeah, that's like,
it's got spoilers in the trailer.
There's a girl.
Actually, the first poster I saw of it was the one with the Hannibal Lecter mask thing.
Yeah,
I couldn't tell her age.
Yeah, well, that was the distributor, and so I mean, that's actually, I think it was a good on their part because it's such an eye catcher, like in terms of if you look at it as just a thumbnail, that's how they sold us on it, was they showed it to us in a lineup of movies, and it jumps right out at you because it's like, oh, what's this? And so I think that's gone a long way for us in terms of catching people's eyes and getting, because it's such a weird world to be in online of like, so much of it is just about clicks. We need people to click the poster, and then if they think that looks interesting, right, then they'll watch the trailer, which we have a great teaser that's just like a slow, it's again, it's just the girl slow pushing on her, and then she like looks up at the end and things start shaking, like, which that is enough to get people usually to like say, oh, I'll take a look at this. And so it's this weird click-based world, which is not, you know, leads to a lot of things that kind of run contrary to what you would normally expect or do.
Internet's a weird place.
Yeah, it's a weird place.
Like, yes, it is.
You have to think about the clicks if you're gonna dive into this and expect to, like, see turns in it, which is, it's weird because it's not what you it's not what you normally associate with, like, oh, you want to, of course, go in and say, I'm going to tell a good enough story in this movie that, like, people are going to just respond to it. And it's like, well, you know, if we hadn't had those, if we hadn't been able to, because we got that initial push on Amazon too, because I went ham on just emailing every horror site online, because they have these giant followings. They have, you know, 700,000, 800,000 on 1.5 million followings on Facebook that they send all their articles out to. So I got those to review the movie, and I was really worried because I was like, okay, well, I got them to review it, but like, are all these horror audiences going to be like, oh, this isn't actually horror, this sucks? I was so surprised because they all loved it. They all just you know, over the moon reviews about, you know, like, about the movie, and just, you know, 9 out of 10s, you know, like, I'm just, and so those blasted out right before the movie came out, and I think that, I mean, really got us that, like, initial thrust into that world.
Yeah, absolutely. If no one knows it's there.
Yeah. And I didn't think of it as a horror movie. Like, I knew the poster would, like, help sell as having that horror element. But I was worried that they were gonna, like, there was gonna be backlash that it wasn't actually horror. But hey,
I think you did good.
Horror movie fans are movie fans first. That's what one guy told me.
True, absolutely true. All right, Mr. Hagahe, we appreciate again so much. That'd be a great documentary. Hagahe from Brazil to Buffalo. That would be a great documentary. Thanks again.
We hope you enjoyed this special episode of Cinema Savants with our wonderful, magnificent guest, Alex Hoy. And next week, we will resume our regular duties by telling you all the things about movies that are forthcoming that you probably didn't want to know. Yeah, there's Transformers movie news. Ugh. But you know what? We'll get it out of the way quick. In the meantime, have a good week and go see a movie.
Captain, we're losing power in the warp engines.
I think we should be leaving now.
I'm going to go home and sleep with my wife.
And on that unusually harmonious bombshell, it is time to end.
I am very disappointed!
Man, we have a weird job.
It's shameful, but it's a living.
And like that, he's gone.
Darn, that's the end.